May it please the court, Your Honor, Matt.
Wait, just a second, Mr. Tully. I make sure everybody's seated and in place. Okay, very well. Go ahead.
May it please the court, Your Honor, Matthew Tully and Matthew Estes for the appellant. Judge, this is a case that revolves around USERRA and specifically benefits of employment and termination rights. What we want to point out before we go into a lengthy discussion of the abandonment issue is that this case has the potential of upturning Sheehan versus Navy. This case is pretty clear. Step one under the Sheehan versus Navy principle was the appellant was fired because of his military service. That's undisputed. Step two, the reason the agency originally gave for that termination was he exceeded the five-year limit under USERRA. This court in Erickson 1 held that our client, the appellant, did not exceed the five-year term limit in USERRA. That should be the end of this case, and we should have won, but for the fact that abandonment is now coming up. And if abandonment comes up, that's adding a fourth prong to the Sheehan.
But both of those facts were present in Moravec. So your argument that this case conflicts with Sheehan would apply equally, I would assume, to Moravec. Now, you may be right in criticizing where this court has gone with the abandonment theory, but this panel has Moravec, Woodman, Dowling as controlling authority. So the question that at least I would like you to focus on is what would you say by way of distinguishing this case from Moravec? And
absolutely, Judge. One of the key things to distinguish this case is that our client was on military leave, agency-approved military leave during the entire time. The other thing that is clearly important here is that Erickson was not a career employee in the military, as defined by the CFRs. He also repeatedly said that he was going to return to military duty, civilian duty. He repeatedly told the agency, and it's in the agency's appendix, that he's coming back in September 2001 when his orders are over. As we all unfortunately know, something happened in September 2001 which prevented him from coming back, and he's a Special Forces Sergeant Major riding horses in Afghanistan.
Well, when you say he repeatedly told the agency he was coming back, that he was asked in, I guess, 2000, if I have my dates right, when he was coming back, and he said, whenever. I mean, it did not, and then he was told, given a notice of proposed removal, and didn't say boo with respect to that or the notice of removal for 6 years. So that is parallel to the Moravec situation, it seems to me.
I'm sorry, Judge, but that's not the facts here. On the 25th of January, he said,
of 2000,
and this is to the appellant's appendix A32,
yeah.
He said, I don't want to quit. I prefer the military for the way they treat you, but my job is with the post office.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the arguments have cut off, but my job is with the post office. And to put this in context, on the 3rd of January, the firing official told his supervisor, we're firing him because he exceeded the five-year...
There's no question that the Postal Service got the dates wrong and were wrong about the 5 years because of the extensions available to him. But the question really is what the board, as I understand what the board did, the board took the fact that he didn't say anything at that point when there was a notice of proposed removal and ultimately removal. He says nothing for 5 years until after he leaves the military, and then 9 months later he says, I want to get back.
I'm sorry, Judge.
What did he say between the time of the notice of proposed removal and the time he leaves the military that would indicate to the Postal Service that he wanted his job back?
Judge, I'm sorry, but from the beginning there, that's not reflected in the fact pattern here. If you go to the agency supplemental appendix at A15, A16, and A17, he tried to come back. He filed a union grievance trying to get his job back within minutes of finding out that he was fired. And that is in their brief. In addition, he, on the 25th of January, as recorded by the agency's human resource official, he said, I am coming back in September, and you guys are wrong.
September of what year?
September 2001. He's on military orders.
All right.
And if I don't have the site readily accessible. I believe it's A32. The agency's human resource official wrote down in her contemporaneous notes that he said he's coming back in September 2001. Mm-hmm. So, and he disputed that you can't fire me in that telephone conversation. He said, you cannot fire me. I'm still protected by USERRA.
What happened with that grievance?
It was dismissed because he was fired. He was trying to get his job back, and the grievance basically, you couldn't get your job back because you have to fight under USERRA and you can't go through the union grievance process.
Were the grievance related to his job or the handling of some debt?
Judge, I would argue it's a pro se pleading in an informal union environment. And the exact quotes in there clearly delineate to me. The quote is, I feel that they should not...
Where is this?
This is Agency Supplemental Appendix A15, 16, and 17.
Yeah.
And it says, you know, on March 5th, 2001, minutes after learning he was fired, he filed a grievance in which he stated, and I quote, I feel that they should not have been able to take my job away and terminate my employment as I was out on government orders. I request that the U.S. Post Office make me entirely whole. That is a pro se person's comments in an informal matter. And this was months before he was about to come off active duty. So he's coming off the military training. He's ready to go back to the post office, and he says, hey, I just found out I got fired. What's this about? And they said, nothing you can do. Go to the union. The union says, well, let's fill out this grievance. And the grievance goes somewhere nobody knows. September 11th comes around.
Goes somewhere nobody knows. Again, what do we have in the record what exactly happened with respect to the grievance?
Judge, this record is not very good. This is the same record you two had 2 years ago. Because
right.
When it went back to MSBB, the record was not developed on the abandonment issue. So it is not in the record as to what happened.
Yeah. Right.
So, and I don't want to go outside of that. In my opinion, MSPB should have developed this record much better for this court because right now it's a lot of he said, she said, and I would argue that under the Supreme Court precedent, you have to side in favor of the veteran when it comes down to those types of issues.
When he had his discussion before his removal in 2000, he said something like, well, I can't come back until my orders are completed in September 2001, right?
Can I put that context, that telephone conversation? On the 3rd of January, the firing official said, let's fire. On the 4th of January, a human resource person or Erickson's direct supervisor started sending out letters to his military commander saying, you're under investigation. She, if you read her email, she says that she called everybody in the National Guard all the way up to the ombudsman in Washington, D.C., my client gets called in one morning from his commander, and his commander's commander got a phone call, whose commander's commander got a phone call and said, you need to call this woman. So on the 25th of January, he's a little bit perturbed because he's doing military duty. All of his commanders are upset. He gets on the phone, and what does she say? You need to resign. I'm not resigning. I'm coming back to the post office.
He said, but I'm not coming back.
And that's in the record.
I'm not coming back till September 2001 because I'm on orders.
I'm on orders.
Right. Now, so my question is this, that by September 2001, would that have taken him beyond the five-year window?
Judge, I believe that's hypothetical, and I believe the answer to
well,
be
why
no.
Why is that hypothetical?
Because there were several facts that occurred after he got fired that determine whether or not he still would have had the 5 years or not. I'm of the position that he still has 5 years in September 2001. Because he would have had more of the exceptions under USERRA. This is not a clear cut, you know, he went to Pittsburgh for 5 years. He is a special forces soldier, and special forces training is exempt from the 5 year rule. Every time he went to war was exempt from the 5 year rule. This is not your normal National Guard cook. So when we went through his 23 years of military service, on a layperson, which is what the post office saw, is, hey, this is excessive military, you're fired. But when you go through it line by line, you start minusing out exceptions to exceptions to exceptions into USERRA, and he comes out clean.
Does that exception require mandatory military service or voluntary military service?
There is no distinction under USERRA between voluntary and involuntary military service. As a matter of fact, USERRA outlaws that. Under the VRRA, which was a predecessor for USERRA, you could only do involuntary service and get certain types of credit. USERRA says you can't take into account whether or not it was voluntary or involuntary as long as he gets, as long as he doesn't exceed the 5-year rule.
After
I thought USERRA required the MSPB to take a look at the obligated service versus unobligated service.
Not true, Judge. The obligated service is an exemption. So let's say, for example, Sergeant Major Erickson has to go to Special Forces School. That is a required school for his continued military service. That is exempt from the 5-year rule. Even though he volunteered to go. We have not had a indentured military since the 1960s, 70s, arguably. Everybody volunteers. If you're in the National Guard, you're volunteering. So you can't say, well, he's in the National Guard, he volunteered for it. That would completely cut through what USERRA is for. USERRA is to protect the reservist and also to have senior leaders in the National Guard and Reserve to train the younger kids.
You can volunteer for National Guard duty, but did he volunteer to go on active duty?
I believe...
From National Guard, or was he called up on active duty?
He has been called up. He has more war decorations than there are judges on this panel.
I understand that, but it's a situation where I think the statute might require a distinction, a differentiation between people who volunteer to go on active duty versus people who are called up to active duty.
Judge,
is there such a distinction?
I believe that distinction that you use has been specifically outlawed in USERRA. So I believe the distinction that you used when USERRA took effect in 1994, they specifically said you can't differentiate between voluntary and involuntary service. So
No, not voluntary and involuntary service, but you can volunteer to go into the National Guard. Is that correct?
Yes. That's the only way to get into the National Guard.
You don't necessarily need to volunteer to go on active duty from the National Guard. You can be called from the National Guard in case of an emergency, as it's been done since 2001, since 9/11.
Absolutely, Judge. But you also have to obtain certain schooling that puts you on active duty. So Mr. Erickson's case, he's a Special Forces soldier. He required to be certified as a National Guard Special Forces soldier a minimum of 2 years of active duty and training. Then once he came out of that, he had to go to Airborne School, which was another month of training. Then he went on to Pathfinder School. All of those schools are active duty that he had to do in order to complete his MOS, his Military Occupational Specialty. That's why when the post office said you exceeded 5 years, if this was any other case, that probably would have been a valid argument. But because of the highly skilled, technically advanced training that he has done a lot of military duty. But it is to make it so that when the alarm bell goes off and the president needed a Special Forces soldier in Afghanistan 3 days after 9/11, they called Rick Erickson.
To continue with the line of questioning of Judge Gallegos, I had the same question, and let me see if we can get at it this way. Was there a point? I understand that if you're in the National Guard, A, you volunteer for the National Guard, and B, you're subject to being called up, and once called up, you're subject to things like stop-loss orders and so forth, all of which are mandatory and, in the sense, involuntary in that even though you initially volunteered, you're nonetheless put in a position that you don't have a choice at that point. Now, the question that I have, and I think Judge Garris's question as well, is, was Mr. Erickson, during the time he was serving with the military and after his mandatory active duty training, was he called up involuntarily for further active duty, or did he volunteer for further active duty at that point?
He was involuntarily sent to Afghanistan. So there were...
And was there any point thereafter, before 2005, that he voluntarily extended his active duty tours?
Yes. He extended it when he could not return to his job in September 2001, and he had no other opportunities. He extended it to mitigate the damages.
I see. All right. And that was voluntary.
That was voluntary, quickly turned into Afghanistan. So
how often did he extend after September 2001? Just once?
Can I just clarify this? Because back in my office, people were confused about these extensions. There is an active duty extension, which is the Woodman extension, where on active duty he extended for 2 years, 3 years, 6 years. Erickson's multiple extensions were in the National Guard. They were not active duty extensions. So he volunteered, he re-enlisted in the National Guard, never the active army, for 4 years at a time. So Woodman's case, he re-enlisted on active duty for 4 years at a time, 3 years at a time. Very different, and a lot of the civilians in my office did not understand that. They understand multiple extensions as in multiple extensions on active duty. You could be in the Guard. I'm in the Guard. I've extended five times. It's 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks in the summer for me. But
the question that we're really trying to get to, I think, at least today, but I think all three of us are trying to get to, is did there come a time, and if there did, how many times and at what points did there come a time in which he had the choice of either continuing on active duty or returning to a non-active duty status during the period between 2000 and 2005?
Judge, it's not in the record, and I don't want to put myself into position of saying something that's not in the record. This record's not fully developed, and I couldn't tell you. I could tell you a gut impression, which does absolutely nothing. It is not nearly as egregious as Woodman. It's not nearly as egregious as Gale. This is a man who wanted to work for the post office, but also wanted to, when World War III broke out, to go and kill our enemies. And he got that until the post office fired him, and they fired him because he exceeded the five-year limit, which we proved was a pretext. This issue of abandonment, it's predominantly tied to his comment on January 24th. On January 3rd, they said that they were going to fire him. There's an email in the record from the hiring official that said he is to be fired. All this about what he said on the 25th, they were goading him on to say something that they could use against him. The proposal letter and the firing letter all talk about you've exceeded your 5 years, that's why you're fired. This abandonment issue is a legal issue that came up by a clever attorney 6 years later. The fact of the matter is he was fired because he exceeded 5 years of military leave. And the post office miscalculated the law and found out that they shouldn't have done what they did. That's the bottom line.
Okay. We'll hear from the government now, and we'll restore your rebuttal time since we asked so many questions. Mr. Praham.
Good morning. May it please the court. If I could just answer Your Honor's question. Your Honor asked whether there was a time after his removal when Mr. Erickson voluntarily reenlisted in the military, and the answer is yes. In 2004, he voluntarily reenlisted for an additional year. I believe that's at Sup App 39.
Well, now let's make sure we're all on the same page here. Did he voluntarily reenlist in the National Guard, or did he voluntarily accept or offer himself for active duty? Mr. Tully's drawing that distinction, and I can see that it makes some sense.
Well, I'm not sure the distinction matters in this instance, because the fact is he was serving full time, regardless.
Well, before we decide whether it matters, which was it?
I don't know the answer to Your Honor's question. I don't know if it was National Guard or full time. I believe it was National Guard,
okay.
But it was full time. He did acknowledge at his deposition that he voluntarily extended his service, I believe at the end of 2004, and his service then lasted until the end of 2005. Now,
but wasn't he on active duty at that particular point in 2000? When all this issue came up?
Yes, he was. Yes, that's right. And
don't we really need to go back to that year and not 2004, 2005?
He was certainly on active duty in 2000 when he was removed. He had voluntarily extended his service, I believe in 1999, for an additional 3 years.
In the National Guard?
That's right. In the National Guard. What's important, of course, here, the court remanded this case back to the board to consider the factual question of whether Mr. Erickson abandoned his his civilian career with the Postal Service in favor of a military career. The key question then before this court is whether the decision by the board is supported by substantial evidence. And if we look at the facts here, now Mr. Erickson, his arguments in his briefs and today largely are an effort to overturn this court's precedent. This court cited Woodman, Moravec, and Dowling when it remanded the case to the board. Mr. Erickson, for example, says, well, the law is clear that once you've, unless you've exceeded the 5-year time limit under USERRA, you're automatically entitled to USERRA rights. That simply isn't true.
In all of those cases, though, you had 14 years in Woodman, Dowling had 12 years, and in Moravec, it was 16 years.
But they weren't above the 5-year cap because the service in those cases was exempt for one reason or another.
Woodman was, I think, affected by the fact that the 5-year cap didn't become effective until sometime later in his period.
That's right.
But he was gone for a long time.
Well, interestingly enough, actually, while he was certainly gone for a long time, his total service was actually less than Mr. Erickson's. Woodman served a total of 20 years. Mr. Erickson testified his deposition that he served a total of 23 years in the military as of his date of his deposition. And one of the key factors in Woodman that this court focused on was the fact that the employee in Woodman had voluntarily reenlisted. In Woodman, it was 3 voluntary reenlistments. Our case, actually, it was 5 voluntary reenlistments. Prior to the removal in 2000, and then a 6th voluntary reenlistment in 2004.
Reenlistment in the National Guard.
That's right.
Not an active duty.
We wouldn't be here if all he had done is reenlisted in the National Guard and had been going 2 weeks during the summer and 1 weekend a month. I mean,
Postal
Service doesn't have a problem with the reenlistment in the National Guard.
No, certainly not. What's key here, the question again is based upon the totality of the facts and circumstances. As this court said in Moravec, can this be characterized as a temporary non-career hiatus in his civil service career? Certainly not in this case. Certainly not a temporary non-career hiatus. In addition to the length of his voluntary service, the last 4 years that he was employed by the Postal Service, 1996 till his removal in 2000, he worked for 4 days in the Postal Service, 4 days. The entire rest of that time, he was serving in the military. Again, he had 5 voluntary reenlistments, so on 5 separate occasions prior to his removal, Mr. Erickson made the conscious choice of continuing to serve in the military.
Henceforth, when we talk about service in the military, let's only refer to active duty, okay? Because I really think the whole National Guard thing is a bit of a red herring here. If you all can say, look, he was volunteering for active duty, then that's pertinent. If all he was is re-signing up for National Guard without also either directly or indirectly agreeing to active duty, then it's a whole different kettle of fish.
I believe he was in active duty.
In active duty. The question was that voluntary on his part, or was he being required to continue his active duty service? Was in terms of his intention to return to his Postal Service job, that seems to me to matter.
Our understanding is he was not required to continue to volunteer. When he had 5 voluntary extensions, at each point he could have opted not to volunteer.
In other words, not to volunteer for the National Guard.
That's right. He didn't have to continue serving. Five of them were before his removal. The last extension was at the end of 2004.
Yeah, what relevance is that to the question of whether he gave up his Postal Service position?
Well, and in fact, Mr. Erickson, one of the arguments he makes is that he says that anything post removal is irrelevant. That simply isn't the case. His actions after he was removed from the Postal Service in 2000 indicate that, yes, in fact, he did intend to pursue a career in the military by continuing to serve until the end of 2005. And also, moreover,
he didn't have a job at the post office at that point, did he?
No.
When he was removed?
No, he obviously not, no. But keep in mind that
he... So why wouldn't he go into the military at that point?
Well, he had already signed up for a three-year extension at that point, which lasted for another year or two.
But did he sign up? I'm still confused. Is the post office saying that when you sign up for National Guard duty, you are volunteering for active duty at that point? Or because you're eligible for active duty to be called up as a National Guard member, then you are forsaking your position in the post office?
No. And in fact, I think one has to again look at the facts and circumstances as a whole of this case. Certainly, if the employee had volunteered, regardless of whether it's active duty or temporary, you know, 1 month, a couple days each month, the question is, have they abandoned their Postal Service career? And again, I have to go back to the facts of this case, which is Mr. Erickson served for 4 days, worked for 4 days in the post office during the last 4 years that he was employed. He had extensive absences.
Up to 2001.
Up to 2000. He was removed in 2000. So from 1996 until 2000, 4 days, and I think the last day was actually the end of 1996. So he had all of 1997, 1998, 1999, and the beginning of 2000, he didn't work a single day.
Let me see if I understand what the Postal Service's position would be under these circumstances. I joined the Postal Service, and I want to be working for the Postal Service, but I also want to do military service. I want to do, let's suppose, the maximum amount of military service I can do without forfeiting my government job. So what I say is, I want to work for up to 5 years for the military. I want to go into the military for up to 5 years. I've read USERRA. That seems to permit me to do that. So I sign on, and I volunteer, and I go for 5 years. Then presumably in that situation, you would not argue, as long as I've made my intentions clear, to come back after the 5 years, plus extensions, plus, you know, whatever period of time USERRA gives me to be in the military. You wouldn't argue in that situation that I've abandoned my civilian career, would you?
Under only those facts, no other, if the employee has no other indicia that they're abandoning their Postal Service career, I mean, it's a very different case from our case.
Other than his little conversation with the Postal Service representative about preferring the way they treat people in the military to the way they treat people in the post office, which doesn't come to a whole lot, it seems to me.
Well,
what's the difference up to the point that he's removed?
Well, again, he had five voluntary reenlistments.
Well, but I do too. Remember, I'm going to volunteer for my 5 years. I'm going to take advantage of the maximum that I'm entitled to. But I'm telling you all along, I'm coming back to the Postal Service. You can't argue abandonment in that situation, can you?
Well, I think you potentially could, because remember, it's not simply what you say if all of your actions indicate to the contrary.
No, my actions are, I'm coming back. I make it as clear as I could. I can say, you know, I have read the statute, and I know that I'm entitled to 5 years, and I'm going to take advantage of it. And I'm coming back. The 5 years will not give me retirement. I want to retire out of the Postal Service. I'll see you in five, plus my training period. You wouldn't argue abandonment in that situation, would you?
Well, I would say it would certainly be a more difficult case than the case that we have today. In addition to the fact that Mr. Erickson stated a clear preference for serving in the military, had numerous voluntary extensions, as I said,
My case has voluntary exceptions. The only difference so far is the little conversation with, what was her name, Ms. Wagner or something?
The other differences are, in Mr. Erickson's case, he had a lengthy military career. He served for at least 23 years in the military, 17 years by the time that he was removed. Moreover,
but fewer than five countable years outside of within the scope of USERRA.
But what this court has said is that given the purpose of USERRA, which is to protect non-career benefits, USERRA simply doesn't apply to a situation where an employee abandons their position. And another distinction between Your Honor's hypothetical in this case is that, keep in mind, in 1999, the end of 1999, the Postal Service sent Mr. Erickson a letter saying, please provide us with more information. He didn't respond to that letter. In January of 2000, they sent him a second letter and said, we've set up a scheduled interview with you for January 24th. He didn't show up for the interview. Now, the next day he did call. That's when he had the discussion we referenced earlier. In February of 2000, the Postal Service issued a notice of proposed removal. Now, one would think at that time, if Mr. Erickson's job were truly in the post office, he would have objected to the notice of proposed removal. He would have said, no, the post office is where I want to be. And then a month later, the post office issued the removal letter. Again, one would think that if his job really is with the post office, Mr. Erickson would have said, hey, you've removed me improperly. This is wrong.
Well, he has his grievance.
Well, but the grievance was over a debt repayment. It wasn't a USERRA grievance. And I believe this court actually, in the prior case, in the prior appeal, I believe this court actually said that that is the case, that he acknowledged.
Well, there's no question that it is that the grievance is formally for regarding collection of debt. But he does say in the course of the grievance, I feel they should not have been able to take my job away and terminate my employment as I was out on government orders.
But if anything, the grievance shows all the more that he should have brought a USERRA claim if he really, truly believed that the post office is where his job was. He was certainly aware of his USERRA rights. As Your Honor mentioned, the grievance references the USERRA rights, but the grievance concerned a debt repayment. The fact is, he did not contest his removal until the end of September 2006, more than 6 years after he was removed, and 9 months after his military service, yet he had the time and the wherewithal to file a grievance over a debt repayment. So no, his position was not in the Postal Service as he claims.
But he did not contest the removal that we have subsequently determined was inappropriate. So the question I have is to what extent is that relevant to the question of whether his AGR duty was career military service. So as I understand it, that's the question before us. That USERRA is designed to encourage non-career service. And the question is, well, fine, if he was engaged in career military service, then in effect he's forfeited his rights under USERRA.
That's right.
So what evidence is there that his AGR duty was career military service?
What
you can't, and you it seems to me you can't look to his 4 or 5 extensions of his National Guard duty during the time he worked for the Postal Service. That I don't see how that's at all relevant. So the question is, what evidence is in this record that was considered by the board that points to the conclusion that his AGR duty was career military service?
First, if I could just reference the definition of non-career service, which I think may have precipitated Your Honor's question. That was, of course, that definition doesn't address abandonment under USERRA, but moreover, that was the same argument that was made in the Moravec case. In Moravec, the employee said, My case is different from Woodman because I'm not eligible for a military retirement, which is what Mr. Erickson has said here as well. And this court said, no, you misunderstand Woodman. Woodman is not focused on any one particular fact. Rather, the question is the totality of the circumstances and whether the service can be characterized, again, as a temporary non-career hiatus in your civil service career. Now, given Mr. Erickson's lengthy and voluntary service in the military. And again, I go back to the fact that he was gone for, between 1991 and 1995, he was absent for extended periods of time from his Postal Service career. And moreover, in the last 4 years, as I said, of his Postal Service career, in the last 4 years, he worked 4 days. 4 days. The rest of the time, he was serving in the military. So all of that is evidence that, yes, he opted for a career in the military over a career in the Postal Service. Again,
but all of that clearly was protected under USERRA.
It is, but what this court has said is that not even if you don't meet the five, even if you fall below the five-year cap in USERRA, this court has said that given that USERRA's purpose is to protect non-career service, there are instances where even though you don't hit the cap, you nonetheless have opted to pursue a career in the military. Woodman had not exceeded the cap. I don't believe Moravec and Dowling either exceeded the cap. Otherwise, the court wouldn't have even been talking about abandonment. And that's one of our points, is that Mr. Erickson's attempting to asking this court to overturn that precedent and put a strict five-year cap.
Because it seems to me we've got you know, very few facts here to look to. The board talked about the time of service you just referred to, that he was in his fifth voluntary reenlistment, etc., and had served the last 4 years continuously in the military. So on the one hand, you could say, well, maybe that shows that he was career, his AGR was career military, but not necessarily. Okay, so there's one factor that may or may not answer the question, and then the board turns to his expressed preference for military over civilian service, and that's simply a comment that he made about, well, you know, I prefer the military.
That's right.
That doesn't necessarily, I think that's a pretty weak indicator of the fact that he was serving a career military position.
Again, of course, the standard is whether there's substantial evidence that supports the board's decision.
Well, that's what I'm looking for.
If you look at the context of his statement, he was asked to choose. He was asked, which do you want to pick, the military or the Postal Service? And he didn't say, I choose military.
He just says, I prefer the military over the post office.
That's right, but when asked that question. So if I say, well, do you prefer A or B, and you say, I like A better, that's indicating a preference for A.
Well, but he was asked point blank at that point, are you prepared to resign your civilian position? And he says no, right?
That's right.
But it seems to me that anything else he says is really just sort of a codicil to the basic point, which is he's being asked in the most direct way, are you going civilian or are you going military? And he's saying in a pretty clear fashion, it seems to me, I'm civilian, I'm just on a military hiatus.
A lengthy hiatus,
to be sure, but a hiatus nonetheless.
Well, it's certainly not a temporary hiatus, but I would also
I know,
say
temporary
that,
can include 5 years.
Well,
you know, why is that not temporary?
I would say
maybe
that...
It was not voluntary.
I would say that actions speak louder than words. Again, Mr. Erickson, he had served 4 days in the previous 4 years.
Well, that could be, but you can't. You then say, notwithstanding that the words didn't indicate an intent to abandon his civilian position, nonetheless, we'll use the words as part of the substantial evidence. I mean, it seems to me that conversation is a net negative for the government in this debate as to substantial evidence,
well,
because he's saying I'm coming back even though I'm not wild about the way you guys treat me.
And if he was coming back, he wouldn't have voluntarily re-enlisted in 1999.
Yeah, well, now you've moved off the conversation. You're citing the conversation as something that's part of the substantial evidence. My submission to you is you've got to take the conversation and pretty much toss it aside. So what have we got left once we get rid of the conversation?
Well, I respectfully disagree, but what we have left...
If you disagree, tell me why, given our discussion we've had here, there's anything to that conversation other than support for the proposition that he intended to come back.
He said, yes, I intend to come back down the road, but what he also said was, I prefer the military. I like working at the military better than the postal.
So where's abandonment in that conversation?
Well, again, that is simply one indicia that he preferred his military career over a postal service.
Okay.
Yeah,
however, there were two findings made by the board, which concluded at paragraph 9 at A5, we find the appellant's expressed preference for military over civilian service especially significant in that regard. So that's your statement, he made a preference for military service.
That's right.
And we also find that the appellant's failure to respond to the notice of proposed removal is to the degree file a Chapter 75 appeal of the removal. So those two findings were based on, first of all, his statement that he preferred the military over postal service and that he did not grieve the removal.
That's correct.
So those are the only two findings for abandonment.
No, it wasn't simply that he didn't grieve the removal, but he also didn't respond. To the proposed removal or the notice of removal.
That's all they have for their finding.
No, the other part of the finding is that Mr. Erickson had a lengthy service in the military, including serving, as I said earlier, nearly for 4 years continually in the military.
Well, that was in the footnote. That was not the finding of the body of the opinion.
I believe that the board referenced that in its decision.
It's in a footnote, footnote 1 of page A5. That was the entire finding of the board. We find this and we find that, period.
I guess I would say that at A5, although the very beginning of the of paragraph 9, although the appellant's continuous full-time military service at the time of the alleged USERRA violation was not as lengthy as that of the employee in Woodman.
In Woodman.
That's right. There are other circumstances here that also demonstrate abandonment.
Right. And then they find the next sentence is, we find the appellant's expressed preference for military over civilian service especially significant in this regard.
That's right.
That's the first finding. The second finding, in addition, we find that the appellant's failure to respond to the notice of proposed removal or to grieve or to file Chapter 75 appeal weighs in favor of finding that he intended to abandon his civilian career. Then they footnote the military service.
And the end of paragraph 8, the board also noted that at the time of his removal, the only alleged USERRA violation still at issue, the appellant was serving his fifth consecutive voluntary reenlistment and had been serving full-time in the active guard.
Do we consider that a finding by them? They didn't put that in paragraph 9.
It's part of the
finding.
It's part of the under the analysis section, Your Honor. The previous page has a header analysis.
But as I read that opinion, there were two findings.
The other finding is that at the time of his removal, he was serving his fifth consecutive voluntary reenlistment and had been serving full-time for the last 4 years continuously.
For six of the past 10 years. And then there's no determination as to whether or not there was voluntary service or involuntary service under USERRA.
Well, the determination was that he had five consecutive voluntary reenlistments.
Well, if that's the case, then we might need to take a look at that statute specifically, don't we? As to whether or not the 5 years are there.
I'm not sure I understand Your Honor's question.
Well, to determine whether or not the 5 years were totally voluntary on his part, voluntary active duty versus 5 years of mandatory active duty, a call-up as a National Guard member.
Well, but
that's a differentiation I think that USERRA does make.
It may make that differentiation, but the question here is, regardless of the five-year cap, is the board's decision supported by substantial evidence that Mr. Erickson abandoned his position? You can abandon, I think it's clear under this court's precedent that one can abandon their position but technically not reach the five-year cap because one may have exceptions, as was the case here.
Well, Moravec stands for that proposition.
That's right. And Woodman.
Well, except that Woodman is a special case because of the fact that the five-year
prior to USERRA.
But Moravec is a pure five-year case.
That's right. But our point is that this court can't overturn that precedent. So the only question is the board's factual finding supported by substantial evidence? And I would just cite, Judge Garrison, answer to your question, I would also cite at the bottom of page A5, paragraph 10, however, in our view, the circumstances presented in this case, considered together, are comparable to those our reviewing court has found sufficient to constitute a waiver of USERRA employment rights. And then they cited Woodman and then the Godot case as well. So, unless the court has any further questions, we respectfully request that the court affirm the decision of the board.
Very well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Mr. Tully? couple of minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge. With regard to the letters, I would point out that the MSPB never determined when those letters were actually received by the appellant. And that issue is in a major dispute. The post office sent the letters to his home of record, but he was deployed in the military. He didn't get it. They also sent it to a military address, which he did not work at. So the MSPB's reliance on the fact that he didn't fight the proposal notice or the removal notice, it was not established that he ever received either of those notices until he filed that grievance. And in that grievance, he said, I found out that day that I was fired. So it's kind of unfair to penalize my client when it's not in the record of actual service other than that it was mailed. It didn't say, was it returned? It didn't say, was anybody signing for it a certified mail? It's completely difficult to determine that. Judge, with regard to your question about voluntary service, USERRA 38 U.S.C. 4303 defines uniform service means armed forces, the Army National Guard and the Air National Guard, when engaged in the health for training, inactive duty, or full-time National Guard duty, the commissioned service, and other categories. And there's no definition there of involuntary service, but at 4312H, it specifically says you can't penalize somebody for voluntary service. So 38 U.S.C. 4312H. With regard to what the appellant said, it's pretty clear. I encourage the court to review what was said, and that's at the appellate's brief A32. It says that he's coming back, and he says it's coming back to the post office. And I would encourage the court to review the notes on the supplemental brief at A22 and 23 about what the human resource official said and what her take was. But the bottom line is the four reasons why MSPB held abandonment, the length of service. The length of service by USERRA is specifically outlawed. You can't, under 4312H, you can't take into account the length of service in determining somebody's eligibility. The multiple requests for extension, same thing. Under 38 U.S.C. 4312H, you can't take into account multiple reenlistments.
Well, that would be under subsection C, though, isn't it? Does not exceed the 5 years, except that any such period of service shall not include any service. And then they talk about the initial period of obligated service and so on.
Right, Judge. Very good point. Under H, it has three prerequisites. One, you gave notice of your duty. So basically, you had to be out on military leave. Two, your military leave was protected by USERRA under 5 years, and you asked for reemployment. The agency brought up the fact that he didn't ask for reemployment, but that's because he got fired, so he shouldn't be penalized for that. But assuming that he is on paid military leave, assuming he has under 5 years, he's protected without regard to the duration, the length, all of those other factors, which the law specifically allows him to do. And all he's looking to do is take advantage of the protection so he can go and protect us. And I would urge the court to just consider the implications of Sheehan on this and whether or not if the court sides with abandonment, is that now going to open up the floodgates for every other defense attorney in USERRA case to say abandonment, irrespective of the length of time?
Do you think, I think I have my answer to that.
I think abandonment is a lot like obscenity right now, Judge. You know what it is when you see it, but what that does is create a lot of litigation. So.
Well, I actually, I'm not sure I would have necessarily agreed with you, but Mr. Preheim told me that it's somebody who just had a 5 years with no other facts. He said, I'm going to serve my 5 years, but I intend to come back, could be found to have abandoned his civilian career, which gave me, frankly, some pause.
Judge, if we want to get into a scholarly discussion about this, this is judicial, abandonment is judicial activism at its extreme. The law here clearly delineates what are the defenses on USERRA. It clearly delineates almost everything there is about USERRA. Abandonment is judicial activism and not judicial conservatism.
Well, this isn't an interpretation. Maybe a bit, you may be taking the ball and running a bit with it. I mean, if to take a case different from the one I put to Mr. Preheim, instead I have a case in which I say to the human resources person, I'm not coming back to the Postal Service. I'm out of here. I have no intention whatsoever of coming back, and I put myself into a military job that involves potentially going all the way through to retirement, and then for whatever reason, I decide much later, but still within the 5 years, to to come back, I think I'm subject to abandonment, and I don't think it would be crazy for a court to say, you know, that really isn't the kind of thing that USERRA was intended to protect. You wouldn't disagree with that proposition, would you?
Judge, the proposition that I would propose is a prima facie
show. Before you get to your proposition, how about my proposition? Do you disagree with me that that would be a reasonable circumstance in which the 5 years wouldn't have been necessarily violated, but it would be reasonable to conclude that the person had abandoned his civilian position?
I believe that without written, knowing, knowledgeable release of your USERRA rights, you cannot abandon them. So if I told the HR manager that I have no intentions of coming back, you're still protected by USERRA. If I put it in writing, I believe that changes the ballgame. And just this proposition that I throw out that I think is relatively reasonable is if you're protected by USERRA, there should be a prima facie showing that you can't abandon. So if that is the case, if there's a prima facie showing that there is an abandonment, the agency has to attack that showing. In this case here, the agency has put up affirmative defense that we're trying to knock down. It shifts the burdens, and it doesn't seem to be fair, especially in light of the Supreme Court holdings and veterans' benefits, and in light of the facts of this case where this is a war hero. If there was a better plaintiff, I haven't seen him. This is the perfect plaintiff who, on the week, you know, when he's not going to war, he's, you know, delivering mail, but yet he's getting parachuted in and riding horses in Afghanistan a few days after we get attacked.
Okay.
Thank you, Judge.
We thank both counsel. The case is submitted.